Shots Castlandia. I am here today with Dora, who goes by Missy_D811 at AO3, and we will make sure that that link is in the show notes. And I am so excited to chat about a ship that I like, but I'm not super versed in. And I think Dora is going to teach me all about it, and you guys too, so I can't wait. So Dora, welcome to the pod.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So tell us we'll start where we start with everybody. What is your fandom origin story?
Okay. So the short story is that I have been a fan of superheroes my whole life. And the long story, we'll get into it now. So I grew up in the 90s watching Saturday morning cartoons, as did many. And so I watched Batman the Animated Series, Superman the Animated Series, the X-Men TV show, all that stuff. But it really wasn't until about high school that I started to like actually look into the different superheroes and their characters and discovering more about that. And part of that was because there were just so many superhero movies coming out when I was in high school, which sounds kind of odd to say now that like the MCU is this behemoth when it was not that in 2007. But you did have the original Spider-Man trilogy, and you had the X-Men movies, and you had the Batman movies were coming out at that time too. So it was like a really exciting time to be a fan of superheroes casually. I wasn't reading comics yet. That didn't happen until after I had graduated college. And part of the reason for that, so I didn't get into fandom until I was an adult proper. And part of the reason for that is just I didn't have the disposable income. I knew I wanted to get into comics to start collecting them to build my collection. You can see it behind me now. I wouldn't have been able to do this 10 years ago. So I just didn't. I was like, I'm going to just hold off until this is something I can actually dedicate some percentage of my life to, and then we'll take it from there. So when I graduated college, Age of Ultron had just come out, and that, for whatever reason, happened to be the movie that made me say, you know what, I want to pick up a Marvel comic. And so the first comic I read was The Confession.
Okay. Age of Ultron gave us all a lot of reactions. I love that yours was, I'm going to pick up a comic. I love that.
Yes. And at the time, it was... Marvel was putting out Secret Wars. So it was the end of the Hickman era of Avengers comics and the beginning of Secret Wars. And I ended up taking a flight to Florida. And on that flight, I read all of the comics leading up to, I think it was like either issue 43 or issue 44 was about to drop, but it was like the big issue was about to drop. And I was like, no, I need to catch up with everything. And I just sat on that plane and read everything. And then when I got back home, I was like, okay, I'm all caught up to speed. And that whole summer, I just read every Battle Worlds world that came out, and I was like super invested.
That is amazing. And for listeners who are who don't have the privilege of seeing Dora's beautiful face as I do, I want you to know that directly over her head is an Iron Man, several Iron Man statues and or coffee mugs. I see a baby Yoda. Like, there is some serious fandom cred happening behind her head right now. In terms of a room raider on Twitter, I'd give this one a 10 out of 10. So from the comics, did you then, like, what did getting active in fandom look like for you?
So I have been on Tumblr since 2012. I joined in October of 2012, and so this was like the height of fandom on Tumblr, and it's very odd to have to describe it to people who weren't on there, because so many of the friends I have now have been on there for almost as many years as I have, if not longer. So they're like, yeah, I remember what it was like. And so I forget that like people keep joining the site, but it was just a... like, cringe culture did not exist. We were not afraid or ashamed to be unabashedly fangirling about stuff. And so I actually have, I can send it to you if you want to include it, but I have the first post I ever posted on Tumblr about Avengers.
Oh,
And
I mean, it's like a time capsule. I'd love that. Yeah, I
yes, yeah,
listeners,
and
I
it's
told you
from.
last night, I didn't join and I didn't, I mean, I joined Tumblr in like 2011, I think, but I used it for non-fandom purposes until 2019. So I love hearing like LiveJournal and Tumblr stories from the peak era of fandom in those spaces.
Yeah, and so everybody was like Chibi Avengers was popular and everybody was writing about the Avengers all living in the tower and being besties and having movie nights and all that stuff. And it was cute, it was fun. I didn't spur me to like read comics or to get heavily invested in fandom, but I saw cute art and I would reblog it and like that was about it. I think I've started to follow like Avengers blogs, but again, it was like a milding interest. It wasn't something that like consumed me. I was consumed by other stuff at that time. I had gotten into Avatar and The Legend of Korra was about to premiere and like that was a whole thing, but that's an aside. So yeah, so the post I sent you is the first time I ever posted about Avengers on any blog. And it's a super cute little panel. So I was like, yeah, that checks out.
Oh, it's, yeah, it's
But
beautiful. We're definitely link it in the show notes.
yeah, and like, my Tumblr is still active, so like you could reblog
Oh
it.
my gosh, yes, I love it. It's 2012 energy. It's going right in the show notes, guys.
It's very 2012 energy. I was just like, yeah, this checks out. So then a few years later, I made a side blog for fandom related stuff. My idea was that I was going to put only MCU and like DCU stuff on there. It was only going to be to talk about comics or TV shows or movies. And that hasn't really happened because I ended up getting more followers on that side blog than on my main. So then I started having conversations with people there and I was just like, whatever. But I also have the first thing I posted to that blog. Yeah. So it's actually a link to my AO3, but it is the first fic that I wrote and posted and cross-posted to Tumblr and AO3, and it's from November of 2015. I still get comments on that story too, so that's nice. I mean, very rarely, like every once in a blue moon or something, but it's nice to know that people still read it. And so, yeah, so 2015, I was home. I was underemployed and had a lot of free time on my hands because school was over and I didn't know what to do with my life. So I read every comic under the sun and I started writing my own fic. By that point, I had been reading fic for about a year or so. So I got invested in the characters to the point where I wanted to seek out alternative medium somewhere between the release of Captain America: The Winter Soldier and the Age of Ultron. I can't pinpoint it to like a specific date. I tried. I did a lot of scouring through my archive to try, but no, there's no like one day this happened. But I do remember really falling in love with Captain America: The Winter Soldier when I watched it. I love spy movies of all sorts. I've watched every James Bond movie there is. And so I really liked the whole vibe that the Russo brothers were going for. And at the time, the Russo brothers were like the Marvel gods. And I know everyone now is like, we were fools, but
Well, people have very mixed reactions, so we're all allowed to feel whatever we feel about
Oh, well,
the
I
episode.
figured this would be an interesting chat because I have some unpopular opinions. So, yeah, so I watched.
My co-host did not hate Endgame, and I
Neither
didn't
did
either.
I.
So
Neither did I,
I
so.
don't. There are pieces of it I don't love pretty strongly, but no, we are a pro whatever makes you happy space here at
Good, good. Yeah,
on the
yeah.
slate. So.
Yeah, so Winter Soldier is still the movie that I feel holds up despite the fact that like Shield is completely non-existent in this universe anymore and like the stakes don't matter because I feel part of the issue I have with watching some of the phase one movies is that this is supposed to be high stakes, but I know that the stakes get higher, and so I don't care. I'm like, it's fine, they're gonna live, they have to fight so-and-so, it'll be fine. But I feel like Winter Soldier still kind of leaves me with this feeling of, what is Steve gonna do? Is Steve gonna find a place for himself? And the answer is not really, but yeah, I'm not a MCU writer. If I were, people would probably be sending me hate mail, because I probably would have sent him back in time anyway, just not to the 40s, but I would have sent him back in time. So anyway, Natasha is the reason why I am heavily invested in fandom. I've always loved Tony Stark as a character. I saw Iron Man in theaters, which is a great experience. And I wish I could like go back to 2008 and watch that movie like fresh faced all over again. But it really was finding out that Scarlett was cast as Natasha for Iron Man 2 that really got me interested. That was the time where I was like learning more about the Marvel characters, and I really liked her a lot. There's nothing to not like. I like spies. I like Russian and Soviet and Cold War aesthetics. I like redheads. There's just nothing there that I wouldn't like. So watching Iron Man 2 was like, okay, this is it. These are the two characters I most love. These are the two people I care about coming into the first Avengers movie. I hadn't seen anybody else's origin story. I just cared about Iron Man and Black Widow. That was it. And I have positive thoughts on the first Avengers movie, but I don't think it's actually the best of the Avengers movies. And I think the first hour of Endgame is what I would have wanted three Avengers movies to have been about. I would have wanted to see them actually coming together and planning a mission and going on their mission and the mission falling apart. That's what I wanted. That's what I want out of Fix. That's what I want out of comics. And it's really what I wish that MCU had given us. We have like the 5-second intro of Age of Ultron, where you see them going to the Hydra base. I would have wanted to see like the conversation on the Quinjet and the planning that went into it beforehand. But the MCU decided they wanted to not do that for some reason.
Well, then it makes sense to me that, like, Captain, that, you know, Winter Soldier really smacked for you, because that is the most Nat content we really get in terms of her showing her Black Widow-ness in her brain.
Yes.
Like, we see her body and her training a lot throughout the rest of the MCU, but I think until the first hour of Endgame, you know, the most we are reminded that she's really good at this, I think, is Winter Soldier. And so that makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. And Winter Soldier is just really great in terms of her characterization. I think it fleshes her out. It gives her a friendship with Steve that I really love, and more so, but we'll get to that. And I like the dynamic between her and Sam. The scene on the roof where they're trying to like get information out of the guy, I forgot his name, it's been a while, and he's like, oh, this isn't like you, and Steve's like, no, it's not like me, but it's like her. And then she throws him off the cliff and Sam picks him up with his wings. Brilliant. I wanted 2 hours of that. It was brilliantly executed.
Yeah. So let's talk about Steve and Nat. Talk to me about why they make sense for you.
Okay. So I picked up on hints of maybe I would like to see where this would go in the first Avengers movie. I really did like that, you know, when they're on the, I think they're on the helicarrier before it goes up in the air, if I'm remembering the scene correctly. She comes over and is the only person to like actually talk to him as like a real dude and not a Captain America fanboy, which he was like really tired of by that point, and it only gets worse. And so he, you know, he's young, he's like 26, 27. And that didn't seem young to me at the time. It's young to me now. But you know, he's fresh faced, doe-eyed, all this stuff. And Natasha comes over and is like, hey, so the team. And it just seems like she is one of the few people interested in him as a person. And who wouldn't want that as a friend? You know, also, I love the fact that Scarlett and Evans are friends, like in real life, because you pick up on that. You can definitely tell that there is like a chemistry there that wouldn't necessarily exist if other people were in those roles, because they wouldn't necessarily have like a decades-long friendship to go
Yeah, I mean,
behind
and they
it.
dated on and off a few times, which I think really helps. So, yeah.
You know, I think you get that too with Robert and Mark's characters, where you know people picked up on the science bros because you see it. It makes sense. It clicks. There's something about them that's like, oh, there's a dynamism here. I guess I would say that my male female ship preferences come down to women who could kick my ass and dude who wants her to.
That's a
So
great
that's
summary. That is a great summary.
yeah. Yeah, it's like she could kick my ass and I would want her to do so. And that's what you get here. Is that you get someone who is can go toe to toe with Steve and also sees him as his own person and therefore is aware that he's not infallible or perfect. And on top of that, he learns things from her that he wouldn't be able to learn from other people. And so they both can grow. And you see that throughout Winter Soldier, where he's learning how to be a spy from the best spy.
So true. And my God bless that boy. He can't spy for his to save his life. I mean, to save his life. It's amazing. I also think Evans would not make a great spy. So he's just too much of a puppy. So that fits. That
Pretty
fits.
much, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, I think there's just like many factors in play that I feel like he couldn't like blend into the environment seamlessly the way you would have to if you want to be a spy. He's like too out in the open.
Still, yeah, it's great. So that makes sense. I really like this idea that she was the first person he met when he woke up. Because normally we talk about this as Tony, but like the first person to kind of really get him in some way. But their open dynamic is, I mean, obviously, Tony was a Captain America fanboy. That's a huge part of that building relationship, that she really does not give a living fuck who he is outside
Yeah,
of
and so I mean,
in front of him that will in front of her that will help keep her alive is a really fascinating dynamic.
yeah, and I think, you know, knowing that Natasha is like Fury's right-hand woman and that she would be there and that she's the first person for the team that he really scouts, she would have to be one of the first people there. Like, I know the movie doesn't show that, but we're ignoring canon. She would have to be one of the first people there when Steve is first, you know, defrosted. And it would make sense that they would kind of have her be like, hey, so show him how to be a spy in this age. Show him how to be a shield agent. We want him as an Avenger. It's your job to figure out if he's right for the team because that's what they had her do with Iron Man. So why wouldn't they have her do that with Captain America? But of course, that's because, you know, they decided they didn't want to give Black Widow her own movie for 10 years.
Yeah,
But
like
I'm still
we
waiting.
don't have time to get into the
And I have lived a
prioritization
long
choices.
life.
Yeah, the prioritization choices of Marvel Entertainment. So now that I mean, you've got me, you've hooked me. I need to read more Nat and Steve. What fix should I start with?
So I do have one. Hold on. So it's by Isozyme, actually. It was posted recently. It's called Who I Am, I Am.
Sounds
And I
great.
will link to that in the chat. So,
Yep, and just everything she's linked to me, guys, you will get in the show notes.
that's probably my favorite. I've read a few like one shots, and I am in the process of writing my own, but I I feel like I'm a little harsher for myself when it comes to writing for smaller ships than for writing bigger ships, because with bigger ships, I'm like, oh, well, if it's nobody likes it, it's fine. There's like a thousand other words they can choose from. It's fine. But if I'm writing for a smaller ship, it's like, no, there's nothing out there. I have to I have to fill the void. So I take a lot longer to write. And last year was very difficult to write. I went like 4 months without touching my computer.
That's really relatable to a lot of people. So
Yeah.
not a problem. Well, that's exciting. I know the one that I've read that is that I'll make sure to link in the show notes that I know is a famous one is one that Copper Badge wrote back in like 2012.
Oh yeah, is it the Tiny Spy? Yes. I remember when that was posted. Yes.
Oh
That's a great
no,
one.
it's called Moving the Furniture. I just looked up.
Oh, okay. I don't know if I know that one. I do remember the Tiny Spy, Steve, though. I don't know if I know that one. So
This one,
please
the
share.
summary of this one is Steve thinks about sex a lot and he'd like to have some if he could just stop being an idiot around the people he'd like to have it with.
Oh, that sounds like it's gonna be fun.
Which
Okay.
sounds like peak Steve Rogers 2012. So, so I will make sure to also link that in the show notes, listeners, so that you have access to that as well.
About Endgame, since we had mentioned it before, and I do still really love the first act of Endgame. I think it's the best of the Avengers. I really loved how we see, again, Steve and Natasha's relationship change, where it's clear that they are still in contact, but that it's not what it used to be before. And that makes a lot of sense given that everybody is grieving in their own way, about the state of the world and about their part in it and what led to, that really terrible battle in Wakanda and how things could have been handled differently and all of that. And I'm always interested in the what if. What if they had done this? What if they had done that? And so it was nice to see Natasha in a really vulnerable place. We hadn't seen her before. We've always seen her as like whip smart and ready to attack, and nothing fazes her, and she'll just handle her personal business on her own time. But the mission, the mission. And now the mission fell apart and everything else fell apart, and she does have to face the fact that she can't do it all. And the scene where she's talking to the other Avengers with Okoye and Rocket and stuff, and they're all like, "Nah, there's nothing to do. Just like let it go." Great, amazing. She can't let it go. She is like fixated on this. She has to do something. So for me, it made a lot of sense that she would be the one to choose to give herself over for the stone. I just don't really like the meta narrative stuff behind that, because of course characters aren't just making choices in a vacuum. They're making the choices writers have them make. And so it is frustrating that the writers thought that the best ending for the original female Avenger was to yeet her off a cliff. So that's unforgivable, especially because they had already done that to Gamora. So I was like extra unforgivable. You've already killed two women in the exact same way. Could you at least pick a different form of misogyny you want to pick up? But no. However, I did disagree with a lot of fandom saying that she wouldn't have made that particular choice. And I'm like, no, I do think she would. And I do think she has shown repeatedly that it's not that she doesn't value herself, is that she values the greater good much more than she values herself as an individual. And I think that would be part of her upbringing, in that she was raised as, assuming the Red Room, we have more backstory at some point. But we do see like hints of this in the trailers for the Black Widow movie, is that she's raised to be one of many girls. And they see themselves as sisters, and there's this camaraderie that's supposed to exist between them. And I don't feel like she would, into adulthood, ever truly reject all of that. She wants to be part of a team. We see her working on teams all the time, we never see her working on her own. I mean, she goes off and does things, but she always comes back. She always has a home base she wants to come back to. So the idea of like home and family and tradition does play into her story, and the comics go over that too.
That makes complete sense. I definitely didn't have it like the way I view Endgame. A lot of it is that this is the logical conclusion of the story they were telling, not what I was reading into it, not what I was hoping for, not what, even with the plot holes I think that they gave us and some other stuff like that, it was really clear to me that this is the story they were telling. And so I don't, on that, on a dramaturgical front, I have, you know, I don't feel betrayed. I don't, you know, kind of personally, just kind of whatever about it. The minute the option was up for Nat to sacrifice herself, I knew she would do it. And so that, because it fits with me for her character as well. And I think that's why I'm so always interested in who we as fandom pair her off with, and what it says about the piece of her personality that we are pulling out from her. Like, I know, like, we ship a lot of the women with a lot of different people, I think, as a fandom, except for Pepper. She tends to stay with Tony because that is canon. But, like, you know, we
Well,
kind of,
I ship her with Natasha too,
oh,
so
I ship her
I'm
with
into
Natasha as well. That doesn't mean
the.
no. But I'm just saying, on proportion of head canons, I think one of the only ones that is, it like stays with another character as more than the other. Like, you know, we ship Carol with Maria, but I see Carol flipping all over the place too. You know, Nat is as much with Bucky as she is with Clint, as she is with Steve, as she is with Tony, as she is with Pepper, as she is with Carol. Like, she kind of flips a lot. And some of it is because she's a bit of a cipher, you know, because she's a spy and we don't know her that well. But the other part is that she's such a rich character that canon didn't explore as deeply as it could. And so I think a lot of us have fun picking at the pieces of her and following the train of thought of, okay, well, this woman was raised in this situation. What does this mean for this relationship with this person? Which is what we all do as transformative creators, is the what if questions. So I am mindful of our time though, and I want to make sure, you said you had two more recs for me. So what other two fics do our folks need to read?
So I have a Tony and Natasha story that I wanted to
Yes.
give a shout out to.
I love that
So I'm
shit.
going to link that one. And I have a Steve Tony rec that I really, really love. And but it is a hard read. So I'm going to, this is my warning to the audience. It is a hard read. It is not for those who want lighthearted fluff. It's not any of that. However, it is really well written, and I've reread it numerous times, and every single time I read it, it still hits me in the gut. So
That
that's the
is,
last one.
that's fair. So the Steve Tony she's talking about is Moments Lost in Time by Pathetic Fangirl, which I know some other people quite enjoy. And the Nat Tony is by Death Sweet Queen, or Simmy, who is a past guest on the pod. And it's called Sharp Toothed and Mild as a Doe. And those fics will absolutely be in the show notes, because everyone, while minding the tags, of course, should enjoy them as much as a lot of the rest of us do. So, Dora, I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I loved talking about a character we don't get a chance to talk about as much on the pod. So thanks for sharing some Natasha love. And as the rest of us
Yes.
kind of dive into some Nat fic with Steve and Tony and whoever else, we will make sure to keep an eye on your AO3 for what you create.
Yes, I do have a throuple that I started writing of Steve, Tony, and Natasha, where Steve is a vampire and Tony is a werewolf and Natasha is a hunter. So that's there for someone whoever wants to read. I also have a Tony Natasha story I wrote about them being undercover spies, and I have a lot of Steve Tony. So just peruse AO3.
Sounds perfect to me. Yeah, you're reminding me I need to get back to my Nat Tony that I've started, where they are married but opposing counsel on the same case. So I need to,
That sounds, oops, please send that.
I need to get working. I wrote it as a one shot, and then everyone has asked for it to expand, and
Yes.
I need to get back to that. So anyway, Listen, have a fantastic rest of your day. Thanks again for joining us. And
yes, thank you. Thank you for kicking off the new year with this chat.
My absolute pleasure.